Hello, this is Jay Nemro. You're listening to Life Autistic. This is episode number 637. Pardon me. And I don't know what to call the subject today, except to call it what I've been tossing out there. See, I've been saying to myself, I need one thing. I mean, I can speak on 500 subjects, everybody can. But I think there needs to be one upon which you hang your hat. You know, this is the biggie, the big subject. And here it is. It's the culture of liberty. And let me explain that a little bit. That's not so much as having liberty, like, you know, one would say, well, we have the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. These things help define our liberty. This actually is beyond that. You know me, I'm always going beyond what most people look at to a culture of liberty. The fact that we lack a culture of liberty is what got us into the circumstance we are now, at least in the United States, where we have a trillion laws. We have, it's, what's the term from A Man for All Seasons, the play? Country strewn thick. I don't know if it's strewn. A country thick with laws. And he wasn't saying whether he liked that or not, but he said he preferred that to having no laws at all, or feeling like one is above the law. To go after a devil, you would knock down all the laws in the world to enable you to get at that devil. I find that interesting because we think exactly the opposite way. We tend to write laws to try to shield ourselves from the devil, and that's why we have trillions and trillions of laws. So many that we have absolutely no idea when we're breaking a law. I think we blithely go along breaking dozens of laws every day, and our only peace comes from the fact that law enforcement is either unaware of the laws they should be enforcing, or they simply don't have the resources to look for those laws. Anyway. And that's the circumstance we find ourselves in. A culture of liberty isn't the laws you surround yourself with. It is the attitude that you come, that you wake up in the morning with, and that you lie down with, that colors everything that you do, and that, you know, and that pervades your very being. That's what the culture, that's what your culture is. So what I'm sitting here and talking about, the culture of liberty, we need to define that. What does that mean? It isn't just, well, I live in a country where we have a constitution, and you know what? Our constitution is smashed and battered because very few people actually respect it. Very few people actually honor it. Even those who are charged with the duty of doing so, our Supreme Court, whose primary role is to interpret the Constitution, they have done a fine job of ripping it to shreds. I cannot say that I am a great student of the founding of the United States of America. I defer that to other people, and I trust what they say. You know, how much we have strayed from the original intent. And that ends up being what everybody gets weird about is, you know, this was the original intent of the founders. And, of course, their opponents come back and say, well, they live in a different world. We don't have to listen to the original intent. We can redefine the words in the Constitution to meet our present needs, and, you know, and they do. And that's what we tend to have now, is this. But all this comes, all these wranglings come from the fact that we have walked away from a culture of liberty. The culture that bred the country of the United States of America is fled. It's gone. So few people have within their hearts and within their minds and in their lives the culture of liberty that mere pieces of paper, mere words, are meaningless. We don't support liberty. We don't even particularly want it as a people anymore. One doesn't know when we lost. I don't know when we lost it. But we did. So, there it is. At the very heart of liberty, in my mind, is the whole concept that one's first act is not to curtail the freedom of others. That has to be one's first thing when they get up in the morning is, I am not here to change someone else. If there is a circumstance that I don't like, I need to be the person who changes. That is an act of liberty. That is an act of freedom. You are free to choose, free to act. When one writes a law, you give away that freedom, at least in relation to that law. You can no longer act as you please. You can no longer choose. The choice has been made. You are beholden to a law. The only thing you can do at that point, if you don't like what the law makes you do, is to try to get rid of that law. We find that this is difficult. To get rid of something, we tend to just modify it a little bit, make little provisos, things like that. Because one doesn't want to offend the person who wrote that law, for instance. Especially in a legislative fashion, when one has to compromise constantly to accomplish anything, one is always looking toward the future and saying, if I vote with them on this, perhaps they'll vote with me on one of my things, or I can make some sort of a deal that way. I'm voting for this, you know, I really want this to happen. If you want my vote for what you want to have happen, you have to support me in what I want. And that ends up being a very interesting circumstance. Happens all the time in legislatures all over the world. And we usually look upon this as a good thing. Here is another indication of the culture, and I think an even larger one, is our propensity as a people, not legislatures particularly, but as a people, to say something along these lines. There should be a law, and then an ellipses afterwards, which says, you know, there should be a law to curtail that kind of activity because we think it's bad. There should be a law to do this. There should be a law to do that. And that is not, that doesn't bespeak a culture of liberty. That's something else. That says that everything everything should be codified into a law. Every move you make, everything that you do. I was just thinking this morning of families, for instance. There are many agencies, there are many groups, organizations, mostly governmental, who have invested in themselves the power to pull children out of a family for a variety of reasons. If you get a good enough lawyer, I would have to say that if you weren't giving your child, if you were letting your child drink too much water, I would imagine that there is some way that if somebody decided that they wanted to do something to you, they could use that as a charge to take your children from you. Very heady, strong, amazing power to be able to exercise control over others is to say, hey, if you don't do this, you know, I'll come up with some way to steal your kids away from you, give them to somebody else, make your life an absolute shambles, and nothing you can do about it. I mean, there's got to be at least 100 different ways of doing it. And when it happens, of course, the difficulty of getting your children back is just amazing. Because whoever took them away, once they have a judge authorize that taking, that empowers those people to make that indefinite. In fact, it is implied that it will be indefinite unless you go to amazing lengths to answer to some orthodoxy that will impress the judge and the agency that took them away. I've seen it dozens of times. That's the way the system works, because we do not operate in a culture of liberty. I apologize for having to give negative examples. The only reason I must is because that's pretty much all we have are negative examples of not having a culture of liberty. I was reading just yesterday on the BBC News website. I guess somebody did a survey of Chinese people. Of course, I have to figure that surveys get done by the Chinese government, so one can kind of say, well, that's not very exciting. But it said that the majority of Chinese people want their internet censored. They don't want to have to worry about garbage and things like that. Of course, you know, the censorship just isn't against, you know, pornography and things like that. It's any of the various numbers of thought crimes that the Communist Party of China has come up with. But apparently, they say, you know, in order to curtail the stuff that we really don't want to see, we're willing to have even more censorship on us so that we might have, you know, each little bit makes everybody feel a little better about it. Well, you know, pornography is being censored. That's what I really wanted. And it doesn't really bother me that everything else, that a lot of other things are being censored too. And who is being given that power and who can do that. Now, that may seem like a small thing. A lot of people aren't, you know, a lot of people don't care about the internet. Although it is a fantastic, it's probably one of the last bastions of liberty left in many parts of the world. In the United States, it is the primary venue for discussion of liberty, because so many others, because of, you know, decency laws or kindly speech, you know, you can't do hate speech. you know, even though there's freedom of speech, well, there's certain things that we've decided can't be included in the First Amendment to the Constitution that are so heinous and so terrible that they cannot be said. And more it's becoming speaking out against the government, the whole purpose of why it was there in the first place was so that the citizenry, or at least that's my take on it, the citizenry could speak against their leaders and against their government. And that is being somewhat shut down, slowly, gradually, incrementally. And everybody just seems to kind of shrug and say, well, you know what, honestly, I don't want to hear that stuff either. And that's because we have lost our culture of liberty. If you don't have a strong and vibrant culture of liberty, liberty will be lost. Even if it's incremental, bit by bit, just a little bit at a time, you'll see it and it'll go. And that's why nobody will say, well, you know, that's horrible, we need to bring that back. You know, nobody's calling for that. Nobody. Well, such a small group of people that they are totally inconsequential. This is my big subject. This is what I want to be talking about. This is what I would have to say is near and dear to my heart. If it's just for a few things, I would like to be able to build a house that suits me rather than a house that meets government approval. As an interesting explanation of how the culture of liberty is lost, I will just tell you one thing about how building permits are given out in New Mexico. And I may have to explain a little bit because a lot of people just don't understand the big switch that was made. I was a college student in the 80s, the late 80s. And I was taking classes in home economics. Now, one might think that that's pretty strange, but I had a housing class. Housing has a lot to do with home economics because it's home. Your house has a lot to do with that. And, of course, economics, too. How does one afford pay? How does one acquire these things? We had a building inspector come in. I found him to be enlightening. Not inspiring, but enlightening. And it was the first time when I really said, I don't like where things were headed. This man was very excited. He liked the way things were going. In the old days, you might remember stories of maybe the Middle Ages, for instance, where a cobbler would live above his shop. You know, his shop would be down below at street level so people could get to it. And his private residence would be on the second floor, or the third, perhaps. And, you know, that was why when there was an emergency or something horrible happened, one could really beat on the door or ring the bell, even at late at night, and one could rouse a cobbler to come fix your shoe, I suppose, if that was such an emergency. Now, you know that we don't do that anymore, right? Now, you might think this is a cultural change, and to some degree it is. We tend to lock up our stores at night that are far away from our homes and then go home to our home, which is very separate from it. We tend to separate our work life and our family life or our home life much more. There's a much greater distance between them. It's not just cultural. It has been codified in, if not law, regulation. This guy, I have to be in Portales because I went to Eastern New Mexico University for college, for the last part of my college, to finish up. I He was talking about how wonderful this was. He was talking about zoning regulations, how certain parts of town you could only do certain things. There is industrial zoning where you can only do industrial things. There are commercial zones where you can only have commercial things. And then there are residential areas where you can only have homes and things like that. And so many gradations of this. You can't have multi-unit apartments close to single-family residences, you know. And these things, sometimes they came from a sense of health. Sometimes they came from people's just sense of trying to profit off of one another. Higher classes wanting to keep lower classes out of their neighborhoods. There was a whole lot of reasons why these things happened. But there's a whole web, it's kind of a sticky spider's web of laws around this, to the point to where now you couldn't have a shop that you lived above that shop. Now it is basically illegal. You can't do it. Even if you wanted to, of course, most people would say, why would you want to do that? That sounds like horrible. I wouldn't want to do that. But the whole point is, if you want to do it, you can't, because now there are regulations and perhaps even laws that prevent this kind of thing from occurring in a lot of places, especially in the United States. I don't know how it is in Europe, where there's a strong tradition for that kind of thing. When we came to the United States, we tended to get away from that. All of us cosmopolitan people, I suppose. But this man was excited about that. He loved zoning. Zoning was the wonderful civilizing force, at least in Percalis. And the first thing I said was, this takes away my ability to do two or three things that I might have wanted to do, that might have made my life more pleasant. I might have liked to have to live above my shop. It would have saved me a lot of money. I used to project films, and I always had kind of a weird interest in having my own movie theater, but actually living there, because, you know, it could become a pretty hefty part of your life, and it didn't require a lot of just sitting there and kind of doing it. Projecting a movie has a lot to just being present if something goes wrong. A lot of your time is spent sitting, basically doing other things while you wait for needs in the movie, changing of reels, whatever. And I thought that would be an excellent job for somebody who actually lives there. No, I live here. You know, jobs that have kind of a 24-hour aspect to it, running a TV station, for instance, or being a firefighter, I guess, is still a modern analogy of that that's true. These are guys that tend to do shift work, but they tend to stay on shift the whole time. They tend to spend a lot of time sleeping at the fire station in case something gets called up, you know. Some people work the midnight shift, but the other ones are asleep, but you can rouse them quickly to go take care of a fire, because you only need one or maybe two people there just kind of monitoring things until a call comes in. Until some fire happens. Then all of a sudden, everybody needs to come running, no matter what time of day it is. So they would have people sleeping there. Wonderful opportunity. Now, there are provisos in our laws to allow that kind of stuff, but they're rare. You know, and they're very specific. You may only do this under these circumstances. Only firefighters may sleep in a business. You know, there are laws against allowing this kind of stuff. And it was for a variety of reasons, some of which may have been very practical and very kind-hearted at the time. But when they were codified into law, they all of a sudden started to apply to a lot of things. And taking away your ability. Now, also in this housing class, same time this guy was talking about zoning and things like that, I brought up questions about housing, about the kind of house I wanted to build, and he basically told me one thing: you can't do that. I said, I can't do that? Why can't I do that? It's my land. He goes, it doesn't matter if it's your land. We get to say whether what you're building is okay to build. We will not allow people to be in your building unless you get permission. And he started to explain how the laws in the state of New Mexico in the United States are written. And this is, I don't know if this is true everywhere, but it's interesting in that I thought that the world operated the other way because I come from a culture of liberty. And he said it very succinctly, and I hope you can understand this. I hope you really can, because it's hard to grasp when you're not, when you don't step back a bit from the circumstance and look at it. He said it's really easy. We have a simple system in New Mexico. You need to have a building permit from the state if you build anything except for, and he named off about five or six things that you didn't have to have a building permit for. Now that is the opposite of a culture of liberty. That is a culture of tyranny with a few little permissions thrown in to try to, you know, to try to make it for some things that the government really doesn't want to, that doesn't care about. Like in New Mexico, you must pull a permit for everything that you do except for fences within your allotted offset that are less than 3 feet high that can be seen through, you know, and there's a whole bunch of things that say, yes, you don't need a permit for this kind of a fence, but for everything else you do. I found myself pulling permits for everything. Everything was checked. Everything was looked at. I don't know if that's true everywhere. I guess I came from a world, or from an imaginary world, perhaps, where you only needed to pull permits for certain kinds of work. In New Mexico, you have to pull a permit for any kind of work, except for a handful that they've said they really don't want to have to mess with. They don't care about. Do you see that subtle change from a culture of liberty? And I'm not saying anarchy. I am not a supporter of anarchy because we don't live in a perfect world with perfect people in it that will always be moral and just and always be kind to other people. We don't live in that kind of world with those kind of people. Therefore, we need some government. So if, at the very least, to punish those who trample the rights of others, which is being done all the time. When you have a culture of liberty with some laws attached to it to try and make neighbors treat each other decently, a culture of liberty with some traffic laws thrown in so there isn't just chaos and people getting and bad things happening all the time. I don't consider that to be particularly bad if it is kept firmly in control, if it's kept firmly curtailed. We're not going to go nuts with this. Just how I feel like in New Mexico with building code, with permitting laws, this is the flip side. This is the culture of tyranny with a few exceptions sprinkled in. If you've listened to any of my other recordings, especially the older ones, I used to be a real preacher of loopholes. Loopholes is where you will find some freedom in your life. In a culture of tyranny, which is what I think we have in the United States, I think most people have great respect, much more respect for tyranny and squabbling to, especially among politicians, scrabbling to grab hold and have control of that tyranny, that ability to tyrannize, that that's what we have. You know, it would make our legal system so much simpler if it said everything is illegal. You can do nothing, and then to start spelling out what kinds of things you will allow people to do. I think we're getting to that point. Or that people feel that way. That's why I say it becomes a culture of tyranny, is because by and large, when we wake up in the morning, it becomes, what am I allowed to do today? What can I do? Or here's probably the bigger and more accurate statement, what can I get away with? And that is an attitude that comes from a culture of tyranny. What can I get away with today? Where a culture of liberty says, my world is wide open. If there's just a few little rules, that we all keep. And there's a punishment affixed if we don't choose to keep them. That is a culture of freedom, or liberty, with some government. Very curtailed, very limited. As opposed to what we have now. Even though one can say, oh no, we're free people. I mean, we started out with everybody doing whatever they wanted to, and then we started adding laws when we saw obvious things that we shouldn't allow people to do. Well, now the U.S. Code, you know, I haven't seen how many books it fills. I don't know how many binders there are. I would imagine it's somewhat large, to the point to where we have to have lawyers. And lawyers don't know everything about it. Lawyers have to specialize because there's no way you can have understanding of all of it. It's too complex, too complicated. Even though in the United States as a country, it was started with a culture of liberty, we have ended up having to transform into a culture of tyranny, for the simple reason that we don't know when we're breaking laws. We just have this whole attitude of, can I get away with this? It's like somebody that drives too fast on a highway, faster than the speed limit, for instance. And they do that knowing that they take great risk, well, some risk, in getting caught, getting fined, having something happen to them if a law enforcement person happens by. But their attitude is, what can I get away with? Knowing that there are 5 trillion laws out there, that nobody knows any of those, all those laws, nobody can give you. So the whole basic statement kind of coming back is, you can't do anything except for these 4 or 5 little things that we give you the privilege of doing. Just like in New Mexico with that building permit. You need to have a permit to do anything, except for a few things that the government doesn't want to have to deal with. We feel like are so innocuous or so inconsequential that we won't get involved with. That's the only freedom you have. And, you know, when I was looking at loopholes in the old days, that was what I was looking at. And you know what? That was wrong. Because that operates from the whole philosophy of tyranny. I live in a culture of tyranny. What would the world look like if we still operated from a culture of liberty? What would it look like? What kind of restrictions would we have? The most important and the first thing, and this pervades everything that went on at the founding of the United States of America, in fact, it was so pervasive, I don't think it even really got referred to. Everybody just considered it a given. You know, one doesn't have to say, you know, one needs oxygen to breathe. everybody kind of just supposed that everybody knew that. Now, when you go to a world where the air is basically methane, you might want to say everybody needs oxygen to breathe. Because then it becomes very important to try to find and procure and keep a little bit of oxygen so that you can keep breathing. Everybody thought that liberty was all around them and therefore didn't really have to say anything about liberty. Oh, well, you know, God, of course everybody wants liberty. And you're going, you know what? You don't know that. You don't know that. Especially given our current climate of how things are. We live in a culture of tyranny. Everybody sees the great need. There needs to be a law about that. We need to have, you know, the government needs wide, broad ability to take children away from parents because parents are irresponsible. Parents are bad. Most parents would just as well see their children die as opposed to anything else. So we need to have great opportunity. We need to make it easy to take children away from their parents and then make it very difficult for those parents to get those children back. We need to set lots and lots of restrictions to make that happen. Do you see the tyranny there? Do you see that? How easy it is for kids to be taken away, but yet how difficult it is for those children to go back? And there's been a subtle change there. I don't know when it happened, but it's happened. Getting children taken away is a simple matter now. I think the FLDS scandal makes that very clear. It was a simple matter to take those children away. I think it's an interesting study in government power to say that the fathers broke rules by marrying several women, and the focus was always on that. But then all of a sudden, with the men out of the way, and this is in a culture that loves single parenthood, that honors it almost beyond couple parenthood, you know, how wonderful a single parent is, how sacrificing they are, how much respect and honor we give to them, that when we rendered those FLDS women husbandless, basically drug their husbands off to jail. I don't know what that did to whatever marriage contracts there were. I don't know. But they took the kids away from the mothers. Why? You know, and there's all kinds of conjecture. You know, we don't need to have those people spreading their weird religion around. So here's how we'll handle it. We'll steal their children away from them. That's my take on it. But that's a take from a guy from a culture of liberty. Many of you come from a culture of tyranny that says, we can't allow people freedom. If we allow people to have freedom, look at what happens. FLDS scandal is what happens. We can't tolerate that. We can't let children suffer like that. Question number one is, are the children really suffering? Question number two is, why are we getting involved in this? This is a private family matter or a matter for a group of people that choose to be together. Well, the kids didn't choose that. And you go, but why are you letting kids make those decisions? Don't we normally leave that to parents? Do we call into question all parents and all decisions? Should we steal all the children away at birth? Are all children basically just wards of the state? And if the state approves of the conduct, if the state approves of the religious leanings of that child's biological parents, those kids will be allowed to go home with their parents? Is that what we've come to? Do you see the difference between liberty, which is two people come together and they have kids and they can raise those kids as they see fit, to a culture of tyranny, which says all parents are at their heart sick, twisted, and going to take their kids in the wrong direction, And therefore, we have to have laws plastered all over creation so that basically children belong to the government. And we will allow parents, you know, we will allow parents a parenting permit if they've been through orthodoxy training. If they've gone to classes about not being too religious or not, or, you know, being very supportive of Darwinian evolution as opposed to intelligent design, for instance. You know, everybody talks about having parenting licenses. It comes up every now and then. At some point in the past, it was considered kooky. Now it's considered something that we're really looking at. You know, we can't let these, we can't let stupid, disgusting, slimy adults just copulate. We must regulate this. We must be able to take that child away and put them someplace where we feel is more appropriate. I can just see orphanages starting again, government-controlled orphanages, where kids are raised in a totally sterile environment that is free of such sicknesses as having parents who might have pretty strange ideas about marriage, for instance, if you're going to take the FLDS idea. That's a culture of tyranny. Do you see how we're sliding so much harder that way? And it isn't a pendulum swing. I don't want you to get the idea that it's ever going to swing back particularly. This really has to do with people's attitudes about things. The attitudes that don't swing particularly. The way people look at the world. People look at the world and they approve of a world of tyranny. There should be a law. There should be a law preventing those kinds of things from happening. We need everybody to abide by those laws, too. I need to get some good examples of those, honestly. Our founders, the founders of the United States of America, came from a culture of liberty. A culture that said, you know what? Parents can raise their kids how they like. We might see things that we don't like, you know. We might see them raising kids and giving them attitudes that we're not particularly, that a lot of other people don't find good, but we're not going to get involved in that. We'll raise our kids the way we want our kids to behave. They can raise their kids the way they want their kids to behave. And at some point, that changed. And there was a huge shift. And then people had the idea that kids were not the product of their parents, and the parents could raise them as they please. That ended at some point. Don't ask me when, I don't know. Everything's kind of an incrementalist thing. One cannot put a finger or a time or a date on the time when the shift got made. And all of a sudden, we are in a circumstance of tyranny. What I am here doing, and what I am here hoping for, is I want to spread the idea that we need to have a culture of liberty. We need to stop behaving like happy tyrannists. That's a weird word, but I guess it'll work. Who want more and more and more and more and more laws to curtail stuff that we don't want to see. It's not just the law to the point of being, you know, criminal, stealing and killing. We need to, you know, I preach that we need to leave each other alone. We need to allow other people to behave, to raise their children, to live their lives the way that they choose to, as long as it doesn't interfere with other people. And them living their lives. It does speak a lot to, like, ownership of self, ownership of a piece of property that you actually control, that you can do what you want to on it. And of course there's going to have to be some laws. There's going to have to be some laws to keep peace. There has to be some laws to punish infractions of other people's freedom. If something you do in your backyard is airborne and it drifts into your neighbor's backyard and he doesn't want it to, there needs to be laws on how one can resolve those disputes. I don't like your smell. I don't like your noise. Stuff that you can't keep within a boundary line. We can't have anarchy, and I don't propose anarchy. But I do propose changing the way we feel about these things. I support developing and encouraging a culture of liberty, fighting hard to keep it, because it will have to be kept. The natural tendency is to fall into tyranny. People who are powerful, people who want something from someone else, the natural way to do that is to tyrannize other people. In the United States, that's done through laws and regulations. Beyond just trying to maintain peace and individual liberty, we've gone far beyond that. And that's tyranny. My hope is to, and when you call me at 1-575-461-2716, know that you're going to be getting, and you have somebody, you have me come speak to your group, you know you're going to be getting the culture of liberty. I'm going to be, that's how I'm going to present to you. That's what I'm going to be saying to you. It's going to pervade everything I try to present to you. Because I really am that way. And do I feel like this world is hostile to me? Yes. I want my liberty, and everybody else seems hell-bent on making sure I don't get that. You know, I don't trust that Nimro fella. And you go, that's fine. I intend to get a piece of land and to get my distance from you, so that you don't have to be offended by what I do. But I hope, on the other hand, and I know this is a vain hope in many ways, that you'll also leave me to do what I would like to do. And that's vain given the fact that we live in a culture of tyranny. This is Jay Nimro. The phone number again, if you want me to come and speak to your group, if you want to do anything along those lines, the phone number is 1-575-461-2716. If you just want to make a comment or you want to do something else like that, that would be wonderful. Or if you just don't feel like calling me on the phone to start the ball rolling on coming and speaking to your group, you can contact me at autism, AUTISM, at quix.us. This has been episode number 637, The Culture of Liberty. This is The Life Autistic. I'm Jay Nimro. Where's my pointer? Have a great day.